Well, good morning again. It's great to have you guys here. I'm Brent. If I forgot to introduce myself, I'm the lead pastor. And today's kind of a special day for us as a church because following our second service around noontime, we're going to gather together in the basement and we'll have some sandwiches and chips if you haven't eaten already. And we are here today because we're going to have what we call our annual meeting. And I realize by even saying the word meeting, most of you are like, yeah, I've got to sort my sock drawer this afternoon, so I will not be there. And I get it. I understand. I'm paid to be here, so I get it. I know. But it is an important day because it's the day where we sit down as a church family and we talk about where we are and where we've been and where we're going. And specifically, we want to use today to look into the future and try to say, who has God called us to be as a church? And so the leadership council of the church and the staff present together a ministry plan that kind of outlines the next 12 months and a little bit beyond. And then also beyond that, we have a budget that we present as in addition to some leaders that are being recommended to come onto our leadership team and begin serving a 3-year term. And all this takes place after the second service today. And I know that you guys probably won't stick around, but hey, if you go have brunch, come on back at noon. Come and join us in the basement. I promise it won't be any longer than 3 hours. Just kidding. Just kidding. It'll be under an hour, and we'll do our best. And it's also an opportunity for you, if you have questions about where we're at, where we're going, how we, you know, I try to tell people we try to be as much as possible an open book. There's no secrets. There's no backdoor, backroom meetings taking place to describe things. We want you guys to be in the know because this is not my church. It's our church and it's Jesus's church. And we're all just trying to be faithful stewards of what God is doing through this place we call Ashworth. And so I hope you'll stick around for that. So in thinking about that's what's coming up today, this day is always kind of, I feel pressure when I preach this because I feel like this is always the rah-rah sermon. This is always the vision casting sermon. This is the one I'm supposed to get you excited about who you are and where we're going. And so there's just a tiny bit of pressure on me to say, can I deliver that? And you can tell me or whether or not I've done that after the service. But this summer, we're in a series where we're calling it the Red Letters, and we're looking specifically at the teachings of Jesus. We're looking at what he actually told his disciples, and sometimes these teachings were done straight, just here's what you need to do, and sometimes they were done in parables. And today, as I think about where we are as a church and what lies before us, I thought there's a parable in the Gospel of Matthew that I think is really appropriate for today that I want to share with you. Remember that a parable is just a story. It's like an extended metaphor. It can be a story. It's the way Jesus taught often. And as he would do that, it would use elements from everyday life in order to relay a point, to teach a spiritual truth. And they're not literal descriptions of what happens, but it's just to kind of get you thinking differently about this topic. And a classic definition often used of parables is that they are earthly stories with a heavenly meaning. And so today we're going to look at a parable that if you've been around church at all, you've probably heard. In fact, it's pretty well known in the Bible as well because it's in 3 out of the 4 Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all tell this parable in some form or fashion. And so what I want us to do today is to look at a very familiar parable, but I want to kind of look at it first from the traditional way, but then I want to look at it maybe from a different perspective to see maybe is there something that God's trying to teach us and tell us as a church today that we need to pay attention to. And so we're going to look at the parable of the sower in Matthew chapter 13, and the verses will be on the screen or you can turn in your Bibles there. I will say one of the things that makes this parable unique is that this is one of 2 parables that Jesus actually takes the time after he tells it to sit down with his disciples and say, this is what I mean. So instead of us trying to have to figure out what is Jesus talking about, he makes my job very easy this morning because he tells us, he says, this is what I'm talking about. So starting at Matthew chapter 13, listen to this parable. It says, the same day Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such a large crowd gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it, and while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. He was scattering the seed. Some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow, but when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160 and 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear. Now, to get to Jesus' explanation, we skip a few verses ahead up to verse 18, and then Jesus is with his disciples at this point. He's taken an opportunity to say, here's why I teach in parables, and then he says, now let me tell you exactly what I mean by what I just told you about the parable of the sower. And Jesus says, listen then to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to one who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution come because of the word, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on the good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. This story about a farmer in Jesus' day would have been very common. It would have been a very familiar thing for them to think about. Farming was much different for them than it is for us today. I mean, now we have fancy machines and fancy equipment that's driven by GPS. And I mean, they take and calculate based off satellite imagery exactly how much you can put in a field. And so that satellite drives the tractor around and you're making sure you get the maximum yield for every seed planted. They didn't have John Deere back then. So things were a little different. In fact, even some of the times, their fields weren't even defined by like fences and saying, here's where I'm going to plant. It wasn't uncommon for a farmer, a person to have a field, and running right through the middle of the field was a path that people used all the time. And so there was just this well-worn, very hard path. And so when Jesus tells this story, he knows that the people are going to immediately be able to relate to what he's saying because they're going, oh, I have that at my house. Or, my neighbor, John, has to deal with that. And the image is just simply this. A farmer would go and he'd have a bag draped over him. And as they would go out, he would just start scattering the seed. And we may think, oh, well, that sounds crazy. Well, sometimes they would plow before they scattered the seed, and sometimes they would plow after. And it didn't really matter. They were just trying to get the seed out as far and as wide as they could. And so because they were out there and they weren't, oh, I got to avoid the path there. They weren't doing that. They're just broadcasting the seed as far and as wide as they could. Now, this probably wasn't the most effective method to get all the seed in because, as Jesus said, some of that seed landed on a hard path. The ground was so hard that the seed could never penetrate it. Even if it was plowed, it was too hard. It had been trod with underfoot for so long. And because the seed laid on top that couldn't penetrate the ground, that the birds were waiting there to just come and snatch it up. And what's fascinating is as you read this, we don't get this, but if you read commentaries to understand about the time that birds had this evil imagery to them, there was kind of a satanic overtone when Jesus talks about the birds. Jesus did it before Hitchcock did, evidently. So the birds would, it took you a second. See, I'm making sure you're paying attention. So the birds would come and steal it, and there would be no results from anything on the path at all. And then you have the next kind of soil that Jesus talks about, which is the rocky soil, and the rocky soil was a little tricky because it doesn't mean you went out and you're like, oh man, I see rocks everywhere. That's not what it's talking about. What it means is that there was bedrock or limestone underneath the ground, and it came up so high that there was only a very thin layer of dirt on top. And so it was deceptive, it was deceitful, because when you looked at it, you would think, oh, this is a good place to plant the soil. There's going to be good results. And even when the seed began to grow and sprout, you would think, oh, this is good. But very quickly, you would learn that that wasn't the case, because as the weather, as the elements begin to come in, that seed, that plant would quickly wither away and die. So it was a little probably frustrating in that level. Because without a proper root system, the plant was not equipped to stand up against the weather and the elements. So that was the second soil. The third soil is even a little trickier because not only it doesn't have the rock underneath, but intermixed in with all this seed are weeds. I had an experience with weeds this week in that I have a side of my house I don't go on very often. You know, my son mowed my yard the last time, so I really hadn't been around that side in a while. And as I walked around it this week, I found a thistle. And it was a nice, big, I'm not lying, probably that big. It was crazy. I had to get a shovel to dig the root ball out just to make sure it didn't come back. But it's kind of deceptive because before I saw it grow up that tall, I didn't know it was there. And that would be the same thing as the farmer is scattering seed. You wouldn't know if there were weeds mixed in until things began to sprout and show up. And then you're like, oh, goodness, what do we do? And because weeds are strong and they're resilient, they're going to be fighting for the nutrients that are in that soil. And they're going to do everything they can to get all they can to the demise of the seed that was planted, the good seed. And so because those weeds are there, it will eventually choke out, completely choke out, and kill the good crop. And then the last illustration that Jesus uses is the good soil that produces this amazing harvest. It has a good root system. It's able to grow up. It gets the nutrients it needs, and it can even produce additional seeds that can then be spread out and produce more good crops. That's what Jesus is talking about. And so it's very basic. Jesus describes to us what this parable is about. It's not a mystery. And he tells us this. He says, number one, let me tell you what the seed is. The seed is the word of God. It's the message of Jesus. It's the message of the kingdom. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all describe it just a little bit differently, but all of them mean the same thing. When he talks about the seed, he's saying the seed is the message of Jesus. That God himself in Jesus Christ came and took on human flesh. He lived a sinless life. He died on the cross and rose again that so we can be set free from the power of sin, so that we can be restored in our relationship with God, and that we can stop trying to earn his favor through all the religious rituals, because none of those are effective or efficient in getting done what we need to do, because we can never earn our way to God. And the message of the kingdom, that's the seed that is being talked about. That's the message that needs to be going out. That's what needs to be sown. What this parable highlights, though, is that in each of the four soils, the message is the same. The message is the same when Jesus told it then as it is for us as we tell it today. But we have to understand what Jesus is telling us is that there are different responses to how people hear that message. And maybe in your own mind, you can begin to think about people that you know and how they have responded at various times to spiritual conversations or conversations about Jesus. Maybe it has been that hard soil that's that person that says, I'm not interested at all. Take your Jesus, you can have it. I don't want it. And that would be that hard soil that's just not receptive at all. Or maybe it's that person that you've seen. And I know that in my experience in church, I've seen this where people hear the message of Jesus and man, they flame on really quick. And it's like very exciting. And they're like, everything is awesome. What can I do? And then difficulty comes and a year later, 2 years later, you look around and you're like, where's so-and-so? And you find that just as quickly as they were excited, came to Jesus, that's how quickly they left. I mean, I think some of us have probably experienced relationships, friendships like that before, where they come on strong, but man, they die just as quickly as they come on. What's amazing is it's Jesus describing this. He says, that individual has a lot of joy. And man, that's exciting for us because we look at that, woo, they're very excited, but difficulty comes. Maybe it's because the gospel that they were told, that message of Jesus that they were told was something like, don't worry, when you come to Jesus, everything is easy. Don't worry, Jesus takes care of everything. There won't be a moment of hardship in your life. I don't know about you, but that is not the faith that I've experienced. And it's not the faith that we find written about in the Bible. But sometimes we think, oh, we want to convert people, so let's tell them whatever it takes to convert them. And that's not the seed that Jesus is sowing. And so they come in maybe with this misconception, but whatever it is, that persecution, that difficulty seems to just reveal no root, no real depth to faith, and they wither away. Maybe it's that third person that you've seen before, that they come in, that they're excited about Jesus, they serve, they give of themselves, but then their career takes over. Maybe just worrying about life takes over, and little by little, there begins to be a shift in their life. Where Jesus was first place, things begin to move, and Jesus moves to second and third. And again, sometimes we find ourselves looking around going, what happened to so-and-so? And that's very easy because Jesus describes the two things that are challenges, the well and the worries of life, those two big W's right there that present the greatest challenge to us in having faith. Because worries will kill and destroy our faith faster than anything. And wealth, that pursuit of wealth, will also move Jesus to the side. And Jesus is saying that's a response that some people will give. And then Jesus ends with this good soil, that faith that takes over a person's life and is evident in how they live. They live for Him. They're growing in faith. They share their faith. They're pouring into others. They live their lives with kingdom priorities and not the priorities of the culture they live in. And it's this individual, this good soil, that lives a life of impact. Now, most of the time when you hear this preached on, when you hear this talked about, it's with this question in mind. What type of soil are you? Anybody heard that sermon before? I have. That's the typical question that you hear. What type of soil are you? And I think we can mistakenly think that there is only one and one type of soil that we are. And that if you're the hard path soil, then you're just done. And I don't think that's what Jesus was saying at all. I think what we don't want to do is get in this mindset that says that one single moment in your life, that defines every time how you will receive the gospel. And really what Jesus is talking about is the scope of a person's life and how we respond to Jesus. Because I can tell you that there have been times where my life and my own faith has been choked out by the worries of life. My own faith has been put second because I was pursuing something other than Jesus. Or my faith, difficulties came and my faith began to wither. I've been there. I think maybe many of us have been there. But that doesn't mean that, well, Brent, you're soil two or three and sorry, you're out of luck. No, it's the scope of our whole life, the span of our life that really defines what type of soil we are. There will be those who refuse the message of Jesus. There will be those who don't develop deep roots. There will be those that show some level of faith but don't really stick with it in the long run. But there are those who will hear the message of Jesus, and that seed will take hold of them and radically transform their lives. And that's really what we want to be focusing on. But the question for us, and I told you I wanted to focus on us as a church today, the question for us as a church is, how do we know? How do we know where we are supposed to sow? As I said, many of these soils, you can't tell. Yeah, sometimes when you have an atheist that's writing books and going on television, yeah, it's pretty defined, right? They're pretty hard path. But what about the other soils? We don't want to get into a position where we're going, good, good, bad, 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 good, good, good. And I think that's the reason Jesus told this parable to begin with. You see, anytime you study this parable, what I find fascinating is commentaries will say, this is called the parable of the sower, but really it should be called the parable of the soils because it's all about the four soils. Well, no offense to the commentaries that I read this week, but Jesus himself said, let me describe to you the parable of the sower. And if Jesus calls it the parable of the sower, I'm going to call it the parable of the sower. And let me just tell you, because I think there is something even deeper for us to understand about what Jesus is trying to communicate here. Because I understand that when Jesus tells this story 2,000 years ago, to the crowd he's among, when he's talking about a farmer sowing seed, I understand that he's talking about himself. He's saying, right now in this moment, I am the farmer and I am casting seed all over the place and we're going to see where the good soil is and I'm going to broadcast far and wide to see who can come in, who will come into my kingdom. So Jesus is saying he is the original sower. But Jesus lived, died on the cross, rose again, and ascended into heaven. He's no longer physically present on this earth. And so it tells me that there are others that are responsible for now stepping into the role of the sower. And that's you and me. This really is the parable of the sower because you and I are the ones that are responsible today to make sure that that message of Jesus is getting out there, that is being shared, that is being told. You see, as I think about Jesus and what he did, sometimes we think about well, Jesus had it easier maybe, or we think, oh, well, he was the master teacher, so we won't get the results that he got. And that's not the case. Because when you think about how people responded to Jesus, Jesus really did. He had people that absolutely rejected everything that he said. Now think about that. It's not that they're listening to Brent on a Sunday morning struggle to get words out of his mouth and, you know, hopefully put two coherent sentences together. This is Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And he's talking, and I'd love to think I'd be sitting there like, oh man, tell me more, Jesus, tell me more. But there are people in the crowd going, I don't care. I'm not interested. And there were people who were coming around him and who were there and in the midst of the crowd, and they were there for the show, and they were fickle. And when the going got tough, they're like, yeah, I got things to do. And even the ones that we would describe as the good soil, when Jesus was arrested and crucified, nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. So if we're looking at Jesus as our example, we have to understand that even Jesus didn't have a perfect record when it came to sowing the seed. And that should make us feel a little better. You see, this parable is, I think, very appropriate for us today. And even though it is about the soils, it's about so much more. There's an understanding that I think we need today. And the parable of the sower should be my story, should be your story, where we can talk to one another and we can not maybe use this language, but share with one another, hey, where have you been sowing the seed in your life? Where have you been having those spiritual conversations? Where have you been talking about Jesus? You see, we are the ones that I think, I know, are responsible today to pick up the bag and begin to sow the seed. And this is a cheesy statement I came up with this week, but I think it will help us in remembering this passage, because if we want people to know about Jesus and grow in faith, then we must go into the world and sow the message of Jesus. If we want people to know and grow, then we must go and sow. Isn't that cheesy? But man, is there any more truth than that right there? Because if we are unwilling to go, if we are unwilling to talk about Jesus, people will not know. I mean, even Paul in Romans 10 says, and how can they know unless someone go? And how can they know unless someone tell them? And he builds this case to the point where he says, let's go. Let's go. And it's not just about telling people about Jesus and like, okay, you know, I'm out of here. Then it's about growing. It's about helping people to develop a root system, to understand what it means to have faith, to understand not just Jesus as Savior, but Jesus as Lord, where you surrender your life to Him. And that will not happen unless we pick up the bag and recognize that you and I are the sowers today. And that's why the title of this message is, It's Time to Sow. It's time for us to sow. And I think Jesus, as he lays out this message, gives us so much insight into what we will experience as the sower when we're doing this. First thing is this, I think we see. We cannot sow what we do not own. Jesus talks and he says, there's a farmer and he takes his seed. Sometimes I think we don't talk about Jesus because we really don't possess Jesus. We don't really own him. And don't you understand what I'm saying when I use that language. But we can't sow something that we don't own. The farmer didn't walk outside one day and look and say, oh, look at John's field. That's great. That's going to happen here. No, he had to go. He had to have seed. He had a relationship with his seed. And he scattered his seed all across his field. If we don't know Jesus, we will never be able to tell people about Jesus. And what's crazy here is you can't just stand on somebody else's story. You can't just stand on what everybody else has experienced. Well, I know that Josiah knows Jesus, and he told this story one time. No, that's insufficient. We can't share with others about Jesus if we don't know him. And that means that you and I need to be developing. We need to be developing our own root system and growing our own faith so that we have more and more that we are able to share. We need to make sure that we have that receptive heart to the seed that's been planted and that it's growing. And I will caveat this to say, but we don't want to make it harder than it needs to be. I think too often we can complicate this unnecessarily. You don't need a doctorate in biblical studies to be able to share what a difference Jesus has made in your life. I can remember a time I was in a class for a master's level class I was taking, and a bunch of goofheads sitting around tables, and the question was, how much do you really have to know to be able to put your faith in Jesus? And let me just tell you, there is nothing, I wanted to stick a sharp pencil through my eye. It would have been less painful than being in that conversation in that moment. We started a list, and there was, well, you have to know about creation, and you have to know about the Ten Commandments, and you have to know about this. Nobody can complicate things like Masters of Divinity students in seminary. Let me just tell you what is necessary. One step. If you are one step in front of the person behind you, that is all that's required. Have you surrendered your life to Jesus? Then you can turn around and you can say, hey, let me tell you, I've surrendered my life to Jesus, and here's why, and here's what difference it's made in my life. It doesn't require advanced degrees in order to be able to do that. It only requires one step. And all of us should be able to do that. But we can't sow it if we don't own it. The second thing I think we see in this parable is that Jesus says we have to be intentional. The farmer went out. He went out on purpose to do this. It didn't happen by accident. He didn't wake up one day and walk outside and go, wow, where'd this crop come from? But sometimes I think we approach faith that way. Christians are the worst, right? Well, I'll pray. I am not diminishing prayer. We need to bathe everything we do with prayer. We need to make sure prayer is covering all of it. But sometimes we can say, I'm just going to sit here and pray. No, sometimes it means you get off your rear end and you go do something. You act. Because the farmer could have sat in the house and prayed about a harvest, but that wouldn't have planted any seed. The farmer had to get up intentionally and go into the field in order to start casting that seed. But we have to be intentional about it. Next thing I think we see is this. You realize, as I said earlier, we sow the exact same seed that Jesus did. Think about that. That same message that he's proclaiming is the same message that we get the opportunity to proclaim. And I realize when I say that, you can immediately go kind of have this false humility kind of thing where it's like, yeah, but who am I? Who are you? You're a child of the King. You're a child of God. You're a citizen of the kingdom. What do you mean, who am I? We can't get stuck in this mentality that says, who am I? I mean, and we as a church could certainly do it. Well, who are we? You know, we're just a small Baptist church in West Des Moines, Iowa. You know, there's a big old church down the street. They'll be much more effective than us. We got the same seed they do. We got the same seed Jesus does. We can't sit here and think that because we're different. No. The seed that we have is the same seed that has the power to transform lives. Do we believe that, though? Do you honestly believe that the message of Jesus and Jesus coming into somebody's life can really transform them? I struggle with that sometimes. Because I think if I really believed it, when I saw the family on the verge of divorce, I'd be willing to step in and say, have you stopped to think about maybe how Jesus can fix this? How Jesus can resolve this? When you deal with an addict who is just beaten down repeatedly by the stupid power of sin and drugs, do we really feel like the power of Jesus can really break it? And I want you to know that right here in this service today, there's a young man who can stand up and say, yes, the power of Jesus completely broke a years-long addiction, and that no longer has power over him. Do we truly believe that the seed we've been called to sow is the same seed with the same power that healed people, that restored people, that set people free, that brought people back to life? Because I'm here to tell you, that's the seed we have. And if it's not changing lives, is it because we're just not out there spreading it? In my office, I have two huge calendars on the wall. One says 2018, one says 2019. I like my color-coded sticky notes that I put on the calendar. It's a lot of fun. I have a picture of Des Moines right in the middle because it reminds me of our mission field. It's a beautiful picture of the downtown skyline. And in January of this year, I love those big sticky pads. You guys know what I'm talking about. I have about 8 of them in my office. I love them. In January, I took one of those pieces of paper and I stuck it under Des Moines. And I want to show you what I wrote in January. I look at this every day. It says, we lack absolutely nothing to reach our full kingdom potential and be all that God desires Ashworth to be. Think about that. We lack absolutely nothing to be everything God has called us to be as a church right here and right now. I continue to say, but are we availing ourselves to all that God has given us? And in parentheses, I put the Holy Spirit because I think that's a critical piece. The seed we have, the Spirit of God that lives within us, we've got everything. Yeah, we could sit around here and we could go, yeah, but look at this building. It's old. Man, things are falling apart. Pews are falling apart. I saw stains on the carpet this morning. Can't keep it clean. It's kind of a smelly bathroom occasionally. I hate that thing. That's going to keep us. No, it's not about this building. Well, what about the budget? You know, if we had $500,000 more dollars, man, it's not about the budget. We lack nothing that we need to do and be everything that God has called us to be as a church. Are we availing ourselves to what God has given us? If this statement is true, what is stopping us? Next thing I think Jesus says in this parable is that we have to be willing to sow far and wide. We can't get content or complacent with an us for and no more mentality. To think and look around us and go, wow, we've grown over the last few years. I like this. Let's just stop. We can't get to that place. Yes, I want you to know we exist for one another. When we're dedicating Francis, you better believe it. We're going to love and support that family. We're here for you. We're here for one another. That's biblical. Take care of each other. But we will not end there. We also exist for those who are not here yet. And we must do everything we can to make sure they have the opportunity to hear about Jesus. The problem is, sometimes we only want to sow the seed one way or in a particular place to get a certain type of people to the exclusion of others. Because we know that if we begin to really talk about how Jesus changes everything and we give meaning and purpose to life, it might upset the comfort I'm currently experiencing here. I mean, have you ever thought about some of the crazy things that we do here at Ashworth? I listed a few in my notes. Movie nights. I mean, city parks do those. Swim nights, even when we have over 700 people show up when you're not expecting it. Bible school, a little nutso. 100 kids running around this place for a week. Fascinating. Neighborhood block party in July. Petting zoo, celebration of lights, Ashworth snow. Some of these things are just plain crazy, and I get it. Why would a church put a shaved ice stand on its parking lot? You know why? Because every night I drive by and I see picnic tables full of people and I see a playground full of kids. And you know what's even better? People are paying us to do it, to be here. I'm a genius, just in case you were wondering. No, every night people are here at our church campus. And you know what? Has anybody shown up at church because they got a shaved ice? I don't know. I hope so eventually. But if one family knows we're here when they have a need and they show up, isn't that enough? I mean, that's crazy. But we have to be willing to do this. And really, when we talk about crazy, is there anything crazier than God Himself taking on human flesh, coming to live among us, living a sinless life, partying with sinners, being criticized for it, healing the sick, challenging the religious status quo, dying on the cross and rising from the dead? Is there anything really crazier than that? Probably not. But we do what we do to get the word out about Ashworth because hopefully we hope that that gets the word out about Jesus. And yes, sometimes we do things and it seems to produce zero results. But we do everything we can to make sure everyone around us knows about Jesus Christ. There's a pastor in Oklahoma that I listen to occasionally, and he makes this statement. It's one of the statements that defines their church. He says, we will do anything short of sin to reach people who don't know Jesus. Are we willing to do that? Are we willing to do anything short of sin for the opportunity to tell somebody about Jesus? Another thing to think Jesus teaches us here is this. Won't be easy. Not everything we do is going to be a hit. There's going to be moments where we're tired and discouraged, and that's okay. And sometimes it's going to require us to change. The word that strikes fear in every church member everywhere, I think, what's he talking about? Oh my gosh, did you hear? He said change. No, we're not changing anything yet. Just calm down. But are we willing to if it means more people know Jesus? You see, Jesus highlights it for us, and this isn't primitive thinking. This isn't old school thinking. There's an enemy. There's an enemy against us. It's real. He's real, and he wants nothing more than to come in and stop us. He wants nothing more than to beat us down. He wants nothing more than to discourage you from keeping going. And let me just tell you, when churches begin to make an impact, when churches begin to get noticed, you better believe the enemy's aware. A couple weeks ago, I had a member of Ashworth who's been here, oh, good golly, 20, 30 years. And she came to my office, and she said, I just want to say something to you. I think things are great. We need to be on our guard. She said, I've seen it before. In the 90s, things were going well at Ashworth. Pastor was doing things. Things were happening. We were growing. And then, bam, church split. And she said, it has taken this long for the church to recover. We have to be on guard. There's an enemy. It won't be easy. We have to be prepared. The last thing is this. We can't guarantee anyone's response. It's hard for us to look at people and go, good soil, bad soil, good soil, good soil, good. You know, we can't do that. And so that's why we're just scattering seed as much as we can, as far as we can, because we won't know. And as I said earlier, even Jesus did not have a 100% success rate. Let me wrap this up. You know, ultimately, we have a message that needs to be and must be shared, not just by me, not by the church staff, not just by the leadership team, but by all of us. Not in some canned gospel presentations or stale tactics from years gone by, but in hospitality and conversations and how you live and in relationship, just like Jesus did, caring for people, talking to them, partying with them. Because how will they know and grow unless we go and sow? It's important. Recently, I was reminded of a sermon that was preached in 1792. And you're like, how do you know a sermon that was preached? Okay, you take some classes sometimes and they tell you stuff. There's a guy by the name of William Carey. It's a very interesting time in history. William Carey was actually a Baptist. But it was a time when Baptists had kind of moved away from missions. It was called hyper-Calvinism, and they really believed that God's going to save who he wants, and therefore there's nothing for us to do. And William Carey did not believe this at all. He was stirred in his heart, and so he's known as the father of modern missions. But he preached this sermon. It's called the Deathless Sermon, because even though there's no transcript of it, you can't find the actual sermon. The two points of this sermon continue to live on today. And that's the two points that I just want to close with today. As William Carey preached this sermon to encourage people to say it's time to get off our rear ends and to get into the world and tell people about Jesus, he says, expect great things from God and attempt great things for God. And I want that to be our rallying cry over the next 12 months. I want us to be a church that lives with an expectation that God is going to do things that we today can't even begin to imagine. You know why I think he will? Because he's just that big of a God. But I think also that we as a church have to be willing to attempt great things for God. Are we willing to take the risk? Are we willing to sacrifice personal preference occasionally in order to try things just for the opportunity to tell people about Jesus?